there's lots of logistical work involved when you have a bunch of shorter pieces. It's my distinctive pleasure to welcome to the stage Dr. Bill Weber, who is going to talk a little bit about the reasons behind tonight's program.
Well, it's a great thrill to be up on this stage with this so impressive ensemble. Actually, sing under Johannes and with a couple of the members of this band at the St. Luke's Episcopal Church. I get a great deal out of it. And I might mention that I published a book called Great Transformation of Musical Taste with the Cambridge University Press. It just came out with a Spanish edition in Argentina. So, Johannes has devised a program for us tonight, the kind that was conventional in the 18th and most of the 19th centuries. Nine pieces, none terribly long, three of them vocal music, and the two others related to vocal pieces. That may seem weird to you, especially at an orchestral concert where we are. There you expect three long, imposing works with no singing involved. But think about it. Isn't it weird not to hear anyone sing, since that's the kind of music that, let's face it, most people want to hear? And anyway, why has opera been off limits in orchestral concerts? Well, I immediately have to retract that and say, if you've watched the LA Philharmonic recently, they've been bringing in Tristan, and they're going to have Don Giovanni complete soon. So I find it refreshing to encounter the old kind of program here, to hear a series of short, contrasting pieces all in a row presents an intellectual challenge to our ears. By contrast, the standard program of three well-known pieces seems to be what can be a very lazy kind of listener. When public concerts first arose early in the 18th century, almost all of them had some vocal music, if not mostly vocal music. Not to have any of it would have seemed strange and dull. In fact, nobody would have gone. Opera was more the center of music life back then. The music public was smaller and people knew pretty much the same music, most of it composed in the previous 20 years, maybe. Now, of course, we have all these many options of different musics with different publics today. But back then, it was thought that voices and instruments depended on one another as complementary kinds of virtuosity, bringing what one observer called a love duet, a love duet of bel canto, both singing and playing. What Bob Freer did in the trumpet concerto was therefore seen as closely related with what happened in the duet from Don Giovanni. So the old kind of program usually involved 6 to 10 pieces, maybe 12, maybe 15. Contrast between them was the key principle for the musician putting the program together. One would never put two pieces in the same genre back to back. Indeed, it was unusual to have two instrumental or vocal pieces follow one another unless they were in quite different genre or for different performing forces. An orchestral piece always opened the program, either an opera overture or an upbeat symphonic work, usually older than most pieces on the program. The concerto by Johann Nepomuk Hummel, isn't that a great name, Nepomuk Hummel? This functioned in that fashion, giving us the familiar sound of the classical style in its later period. But you might have been surprised hearing a duet rather than aria, perhaps. But back then, they might have had as many as 6 voices, a sextet. Now, a lot of operas back then that had a lot of sextets. Sometimes the first and perhaps second movement of a symphony would open a concert. The last two would close it. In fact, Johannes considered having one movement of the romantic suite open and the set of another movement, Close the Book, but it turned out that wouldn't work out. So the funeral march from Beethoven's Seventh Symphony was often performed alone, just itself, sometimes at ceremonies, in fact, funerals, big funerals. The finale to either half of a concert often involved a star performer sending people out dazzled by a particular virtuosity. So we just heard a stunning vocal number from Dvorak's Rusalka, didn't we? An example of how a short operatic piece will stick in your mind a long time. Now, the piece from Nixon in China we'll hear after intermission harks back to the period when a concert was expected to offer the favorite pieces from the best-known operas. Bit of a parenthesis here. It's amazing how important that opera, Nixon in China, has become worldwide. I talked at the conservatory in Hanover, Germany, a dozen years ago, and a student told me his friends knew this opera by heart from a bootleg tape. It's extraordinary to discover how American composers are becoming central to people's listening around the world. That did not exist when I was a student. So, opera pieces were also done in the first classic music concerts, which started around 1830. The main orchestra in Paris, based at the Conservatoire, the equivalent to this ensemble, often presented arias from operas by Christoph Wilhelm Gluck, another great name, or the scene where Orpheus descended into hell from his Orpheus and Eurydice, composed in 1774. The next two pieces on the program take our ears into the world of commercial music. This happened often in concerts during the 19th century. To me, Vocalese by Rachmaninoff sounds a lot like the Mantovani Singers. Parents may remember the Mantovani Singers. And you strings, you violins really got it there. Well, you will get it there. I heard it this afternoon at 4 o'clock. This all linked a broad public shaped by music with the music shaped by classical music to a public based on listening to television. The aria from Gianni Schicchi you hear did that as well, since some critics have tended to look down on this opera as a kind of a soap opera. I think it's a kind of a parallel. Again, our minds benefit from confronting music of radically different social connotation on the same program. The piece by Franz Schricker, which concludes the program, offers a different challenge to see how this young composer was adapting moods or techniques he borrowed from Richard Strauss and Gustav Mahler variously. Today we hear so little music by composers not among the greats that it does us good to confront an interesting figure like Schricker. Quote, but did people really listen back then, unquote? That question almost always comes up when I talk about music of the 18th century somewhere. Didn't they talk all the time at the opera, people ask. My answer is that yes, they did. At points, selectively. These people heard the same opera so many times, maybe a dozen times in the season, that they listened when they thought it worth their while. Well, a choice. And as I've argued, they faced a challenging musical experience at a concert back then, hearing 9 short pieces, some very new to them. So we have a lot to learn from facing that challenge today. Thank you.